Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Strength Agenda Radio. My name is Tom. My better looking counterpart over there is John Ziegler. John, good morning. I have a question for you.
Yeah. Good morning.
How do you take your coffee?
Orally.
Jesus Christ. I knew you were I had a feeling you were going to say something stupid. No, I was just curious about it because we're going to be spending. So next week is Masters Worlds. You're going to be spending a lot of time together. Probably the most we've ever spent together in one spot at one time.
This could be the last podcast.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
No. And I was just, it's funny because like I have, like I know people's coffee orders because you know we do a team house. So like Jess, right. I know she puts in her coffee. Rachel, Loretta, Michelle, like I know how they all take their coffee. They all put way too much shit in it. And so I was just curious, like what your how you make your coffee in the morning.
So in Rachel's defense, Rachel drinks hers black, like my dad.
Rachel does. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like a little bit of raw sugar and a splash of oat milk. Like I used to do flavored creamer, but I got away from that. And
you're in for a treat then. The amount of like creamers that get tossed.
Oh, I'm sure.
After we're coming out of after we can move, like we're cleaning up on like the last few days of like a house stay, it blows my mind how much money and flavored creamers we toss out, especially with everybody and their pumpkin spice and everything going on right now.
Oh God, yeah, you know,
it's a thing. Like yeah, Rachel and I will laugh because like. It'll just be first thing in the morning. Her and I'll grab a black cup of coffee and just sit in the corner while everybody's like taking 20 minutes to make theirs and all their nonsense. It's just, you know.
Rachel and I both put a scoop of like collagen in ours as well.
Yeah, I've seen people do that. That's weird. Yeah. No, I mean, I shouldn't talk much. I mean, I have when I'm here. My coffee is different than when I travel, it is just a couple of cubes of ice. I can drink it right away. And, but here, like I put the, the salted caramel element tea.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I bet that's pretty good.
I'll put a little bit of that in my coffee. And then, depending on like a day like today where I'm not going to eat breakfast till a little bit later, I'll put some MCT oil in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say we have a friend who used to be part owner of a company called Lady Bird Provisions, and they literally, their big thing was they made collagen coffee bombs that were made with like MCT oil and everything else, and then flavor, there was some flavor to them, or you could get them with unflavored. They're phenomenal. Absolutely, absolutely amazing. But yeah, we don't do those anymore.
You're not doing coffee and capes anymore, are you?
No.
Okay, so those that don't know, John used to have a coffee roaster company. It was very good. Coffee and capes. I personally enjoyed it. I don't know if I have one of them sitting out here. I do.
Oh, no way.
You used to get
the comics.
Used to get a comic book when you ordered, you know, your coffee or whatever. And one of the ones that I got from that time when I would order it all the time was an Absolute Carnage comic. So I was like, I keep that. I have a few of them up here. This is one my friend gave me. But yeah, I'm a big Venom Carnage fan. And so when you sent that, I was like, I'm definitely keeping this one. I've got a few others around here somewhere from those days. But yeah, anyways, I'm just curious about how you drink your coffee because it's always like, those are little like fascinating things I like to learn about people. And it just, I feel like it tells me something about their personality. What? I have no idea, but.
You know, though, it is interesting to, when you get into a house with a bunch of people that like you work remotely with in some way, shape or form, and then all of a sudden you're in a space together. I did that when I was CEO of a different company, and we all met up for Wodapalooza in Miami, Florida, and we all shared a house. And I am an early riser, not as early as Rachel. Like I don't get up at like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning because that's just ridiculous. But I get up 5:30, 6 a.m. That's early for me, and start kind of moving around and getting, you know, getting going on things. And myself and one other person did that, and then everybody else would like 2 hours after we were up, would start rolling out of bed.
That was like, so like last year for Worlds, we were in Finland, and that was fun to observe because like I do not sleep well usually the first night when I cross a bunch of time zones. And so like I remember Finland, I think it was just Anna Martin was staying with us, who was another coach. She stayed with us for the first few days, and then Loretta and Erica, those were the only people in the house. And I was up at like 5:30 in the morning. And there, it was just based on where people, like, because Loretta's from California, Erica is, Chicago, Anna's from Kansas. I was living in North Carolina at the time. So it was kind of funny. Like, we were waking up based on our time zones. So, like, I was up at 5:30, just sitting out in the back, just kind of watching the sunrise and drinking coffee and everything like that. And like Erica and Anna got up next. They were like an hour and a half behind me. And then like 3 hours later, Loretta woke up. Like, and it was just it I just I always find that kind of stuff interesting. And like next year's Worlds are in Greece, and I'm sure it's going to be a similar thing like the first day. But it was just like, for me, I needed 24 hours, and I was good. Like, the travel was terrible. It was like 20 something hours of travel. We just stayed up that night, tried to go to bed at our normal time, and then like I still woke up around like 5:30, 6 or whatever. And then after that, I was able to get my normal sleep pattern. So, like I said, those are little nuances with travel, competition, our topic today, that I was just curious kind of how people do things and whatnot. The sleep one is always interesting to me because I feel like it's like kids. Like some like Rachel has admitted doing this where she's like, "Oh, I've been up for a few hours. I just didn't want to come out of my room until I heard somebody else." Like she's done like Atlanta last year, because Joy came with us and Joy stayed with us, and like I had the room across the hall from them, so I could hear them up. Like I was up getting ready or whatever, and I could hear them like trying to be quiet and talking and everything. And then like once like Michelle, who was had the room downstairs, was up and making coffee, I'd hear them go downstairs. Like I was just like, oh, that's adorable. But main thing I wanted to talk about, we brought it up in our questions episode where we were talking about like masters and competitions and such like that. And then I had, I had somebody, shoot me a message saying like, hey, it'd be really cool if you kind of dove into competitions and how you prepare your athletes for competitions. Because, every time we go through on social media, when we're going through a competition prep, I always have my obligatory, I'll post about snakes and ladders, and I'll post about our peak paper and stuff like that. And I wanted to also get your take because, you've prepped athletes for, local events and stuff like that. I believe this is going to be the first like worlds that you've come with for.
It is.
You've been at nationals a couple times, like series meets, finals, Howard Cohen, stuff like that. Like you, Howard Cohen, with your athletes and Rachel last year. So I just wanted to kind of get your take on how you do things, versus how I do things. I'm sure there's not going to be a ton of like differences because at the end of the day, it's all the same goal. Like, trying to get an athlete to have their best performance on a competition day, and then just using that competition day as that anchor point and working back. So yeah, I just kind of want to dive into that, give people a little bit of insight for those who might not have an idea how to or might be getting into coaching and like competition preps. I will take a minute to plug though, if competition prep and coaching is something that you are struggling in, especially in the sport of weightlifting, or you just don't know where to start, USAW Level 2 courses are a great way to go about and get those sorted. I'll actually be teaching one the last weekend in October or September.
September out here in Illinois.
It's not on that calendar. I have a bunch of dates behind me. It's not on there. The 27th and 28th, I believe, in Naperville, Illinois. So if you are anywhere within that area, I highly recommend signing up, regardless of whether I'm teaching it or not. Find a USAW Level 2 course. I'm just plugging the one that I'm teaching. I enjoy them. It was actually probably the course I learned the most at as a weightlifting coach in terms of like understanding competition prep, counting cards, things like that. Because I talk about my experiences as a coach and learning from Glenn and all that. It's kind of the wild, wild west. I learned how to count cards literally day of a meet. Glenn was just like, hey, I need you to count cards for this person. And I had never done it before. So I literally just kind of like looked at it, figured it out real quick, and went from there. And the rest is history. Meet coaching is some of my favorite stuff ever. I like playing with the cards and messing with people and, just watching my athletes do well and stuff. So when we're talking about meet prep, or for any sort of a competition. And feel free to also throw in like CrossFit stuff too, because that has always intrigued me. Anytime I've had somebody who's like a competitive CrossFitter that wants me to compete, like to prep for them, I tell them flat out, I'm like, I don't even know where to start, because I really
Yeah.
don't. Just because of such the variability of events and things like that, and just the nature of that fitness space in particular. So when
Sure, yeah.
you're doing competition prep, like about how far out do you usually start? And like you can give it on like a local to a national to like an international level, or just what you have, if you have a general rule of thumb, like how far out do you start prepping?
I don't have a general rule of thumb. I base it more off of kind of like the level of the competition, right? And the athlete. So for instance, if it's a local comp, we can start prepping, comfortably 8 weeks out. You know what I mean? Like you could shorten it and do a 6 week prep cycle, but I feel like in a 6 week prep cycle, you're gonna miss something. And you know what I mean? Like you're gonna miss being able to really dial in some technique aspects, see where mentally people are actually at, which is a big one. I mean, if we're talking about mental stuff, like being married to Rachel obviously is one of your athletes, and watching her as she goes through that mental piece, right? It begins like that mental piece like starts to settle in for her, where she starts going through like the struggles in her head, probably 6 weeks out. So, I'm not a big fan of doing like a 6 week prep cycle if it's somebody who's like last second, like, hey, I think I'm gonna do this competition. All right. Well, we can try to kind of figure out where you're at really quick and taper you off and do the best we can to get you ready for that. But ideally for a local comp, we're doing 8 weeks of prep. I think if you're talking nationals or worlds, that's a very different ball game. So it kind of goes. And I'll take it more because I've never really done the world thing. Like you mentioned, this is my first time doing world. So as we go from like local to nationals, right? It's really, I look at it as, okay, you just did this local comp and nationals is, let's say, 4 months out. Well, let's take a week off after, the local comp to just decompress, reset, let your CNS recover. Have fun for a week, because that mental piece, like
All right, Mike Tyson.
I think, and you, I'd be interested to hear your take on this. So my take on the mental piece is I think it's one of the most underrated pieces that people account for, because when you see the way, for me, when I see the way people show up to their day of comp, that stress and energy level, that chaotic energy that they're experiencing internally, and that mental stress that they're going through is super evident. It's like watching like somebody just kind of buzzing inside of their own skin, and then they get through the competition and succeed or fail, there's this massive emotional like swing that takes place throughout the weekend. And when they come out of it, it's like you're coming off a high.
Yes, and that's it, it we were I, Karen and I were just talking about this last night, because you and I have talked about this. We mentioned it, during that questions episode, like the Masters calendar and just how saturated the Masters calendar is. And there
So
are people,
much,
like
dude.
the way the USA Masters has their calendar set up is they don't take qualification totals for nationals or the Howard Cohen. Anybody can sign up for those events, but they do have a qualification total for worlds. And so, but the other thing is they have their Grand Slam award, where it's if you win Pan Ams, if you win nationals, Howard Cohen, and worlds, you get the special award. And it's kind of a cool, accolade to have.
Michelle's gotten that, right?
Huh?
Michelle hasn't.
Yeah, Michelle's won it a couple times. Yeah. It's just one of those situations where we were talking about it last night in the sense of like people who are doing worlds this year, or like we ran into this. That's why a bunch of us did the Howard Cohen last year. And so because like I had told people flat out, like if you need a qualification total for worlds, pick one of the meets, either Howard Cohen or Nationals. We're not doing both because of that mental aspect that you were talking about. And then we're kind of, and I said flat out, like, because you mentioned, local, national, international type levels. And I am a huge like believer that the adrenaline dump is it escalates. The bigger the stage, the bigger the stressors that are involved. And when I talk about that, it's like a local competition. Do I think a local competition is stressful? For me, absolutely not. For lifters, it can be depending on how inexperienced you are. Once you
Yes.
get more experience, it's just another heavy training day. But like usually for some sort of a local competition, you're sleeping in your own bed. You've only traveled like an hour or so to get to the competition. You're, 4 hours at the venue. You get your medal, you go home, sort of a deal, and then carry on with your life. But like the higher up in the levels that you get, you've got to plan, your travel in terms of how many days ahead of your competition are you getting in? What time zone is the competition in? What is your lodging going to look like? Are you doing a team house? Are you staying by yourself? How are you going to get back and forth? Are there grocery stores available? So are you going to be just eating out the entire time that you have to adjust because you're staying in a hotel, or are you going to be able to have a kitchen where you can make your food and all of those things? Are there going to be
That's
people that
huge.
you're going to be staying with that you don't necessarily care for? So you got to be on your best behavior around them so you don't lose your shit or you don't harm them or anything along those lines. And then you have the competition itself. Are you cutting weight for this competition? How is your body going to respond to the plane if you're flying versus driving? And then, again, the time zone difference. Like we're going to Vegas. Vegas is very dry. A lot of these people coming from more humid, more damp climates are going to struggle those first few days in Vegas because they're going to forget. They're not going to sweat because of that dry heat. And so they're going to forget to be drinking water and they're going to start cramping up and being dehydrated and all that stuff. And then so you take all of those factors in, and we haven't even gotten to the competition itself, where you then have to step on that platform. And not only are you stepping on the platform with all of that other shit going on before you got there, but now you have to go and you have to have the best six lifts of the last, 8 to 12 weeks of your competition prep. And if you only make four of those lifts, that could be the difference between you finishing on top of the podium or completely off the podium. So it's just all these different factors. And then once that competition is over, that last bar drops, just the entire just emotional drain that happens. And then on top of that, you then have to travel home and you have to kind of into a new groove of life and traveling back through the time zones and getting to the airport, making sure you don't miss your flight and all that stuff. And so, yeah, it takes a while to recover. And you've got people who think that they are just invincible and that they can handle it over and over and over again. And it's just like after a while, the body is going to be like, I'm done. And so that's probably my biggest issue with this current calendar is like I said, USA Masters in particular, I think they have like six events on their calendar for the year. USAW is not much better with five, because they have the two series, or well, it depends, but it's four or five depending. They have the two series meets, finals, their nationals, and then worlds if worlds is in a favorable spot. So four to five, and then 5 to 6 for the other organization. That's still a ton of meets to have to manage and peak and valley for. And so like when I'm setting up expectations for lifters, I tell them flat out, like, we are picking two that are important to you. Usually for my master's crew, it's like this year's a weird year. This is the first year we've done a lot of meets, and I don't know how I feel about it. I'm tracking the results, competition to competition, because I have athletes who are going to do, 5 to 6 meets this year, and
Jesus.
I'm curious to see how the results are going to go. Because at the end of the day, as coaches, like we can offer advice. We can say, hey, I this is what I think. But at the end of the day, we are a support role. So like and when the split occurred, people were taking sides and that all that tribalism and stuff. And I was just simply like, and I've had this stance from the get-go. It's like my loyalty is to the athletes, not to an organization. So like if it's a little more stress for me, sure, fine, whatever. I'm gonna go where the
Right,
athletes
yeah.
are. So yeah, I think that mental thing is often underlooked or overlooked,
Yeah.
and underappreciated, coming out of competitions because everybody responds differently. For me, for instance, the older I get, the more time I need from a competition.
Oh,
Even
yeah.
like going down, like when I did the grid thing in Texas, I didn't do much, but like the travel of driving to and from Texas, and all that stuff, like I wasn't feeling normal for about a week and a half after that. Usually these trips, like last year, I remember when I went to Finland, it took me about almost a full week before I did anything when I got back from Finland, because even though I wasn't competing and I, all that stuff, just that being emotionally turned on and turned off for, I think we had five athletes competing or something like that across, 6 or 7 days, just being that emotionally invested in their thing. And then, trying to manage the day to day and all that stuff and the stress of getting home and everything. Like it was just one of those situations where like I literally was a bump on the log for like a week after the fact.
Yeah.
I don't anticipate Vegas being as bad, but it could be because we have a lot more athletes competing. Of the 9 days or whatever, I think we have one day off,
Yeah.
in
One
terms
day.
of like, and so it's just one of those situations where, yeah, the emotional toll is definitely something that is often not taken into consideration when it comes to competition prep. But to go back to your previous or my previous question to you, 8 weeks is about the bare minimum. I would agree with that. 12 is, like I said, if it's a what I consider a train through meet, 8 weeks is what we'll do. And usually
Yeah.
what will happen is it'll be 4 weeks of like lower volume, lower intensity stuff than our traditional 4 week ramp up. And then if it's 12 weeks, it is our full on meet prep. And so like our folks that are doing mid-ams, and because when I'm setting up the calendar year and our two big competitions, like I have it set up essentially, what I call local, regional, national is kind
Yeah.
of how I sort it out. And so like my local for, a lot of our athletes is the Illinois State Meet and Mid-Americans. Those are our two big competitions that we do. For like the regional folks, it's usually, a state or usually a state meet and one of the virus meets or virus finals. Those are
Okay.
like that. And then from there, it's our master's level folks, which is usually like a nationals and a worlds. I will allow people to do both nationals if they want. I tell them which one is more important to you because you're training through the other. And we kind of go from there. And then, like I said, so like I have athletes that will be doing Daytona. That and the 12 week mark is literally the Monday we get back from Vegas. So like I've told all the athletes that are doing Vegas that also want to do Daytona, you're gonna have 6 weeks of light work. I call it bridge work, where it's like we're not going above 85%. We're just kind of moving around at your pace and stuff like that. And then 6 weeks out, we'll get them back on prep. So it's counter to your point, but it's one of those like asterisk type situations
Yeah,
because
right. Yeah.
we're just coming off a big competition prep or whatever, and then we got to turn around and do it again within another 12 weeks, and the body needs that recuperation time to like let things kind of settle, let things get back into a groove so that they can slowly start to build back up.
Yeah, and you know, I agree 100%, you know, with that 12 weeks is ideal, right? Eight's the minimum, 12's ideal, you know. Six is like, I'm not comfortable.
Yes, no.
Like prepping somebody for six, it's like that's a super short window. So what's your expectation as an individual going into that competition? Are you brand new and we just want to get that experience in for you? Whether it's, you know, whether it's a weightlifting meet that's local and you just want to feel what it's like to be on the platform, because I don't think a lot of people understand, you know, standing on a platform, staring out at a group of people that are all watching you
Yes.
in essentially a swimsuit of
Yeah.
sorts, right? An
Yeah.
old-timey swimsuit, and you're lifting. And so that's that mental piece is there from a CrossFit competition aspect. I actually think that weightlifters have a harder time in their first competition than CrossFit athletes have in their first, because in a CrossFit athlete's first competition, whether it's individual or team, it doesn't really matter. You have multiple workouts through the day, but like so does everybody else at the same exact time. So you're not necessarily the focal point of everybody's attention. Whereas in a weightlifting meet, you are 100% for that 1 minute you're on the platform, the focal point for everybody.
One of the things I used to laugh about the most is when you'd get somebody brand new and they say, like, I have goals of competing or whatever. And then they'd be in the gym lifting, and then they're like, could you not stare at me? And I'm like,
Yeah. And you're like, oh, your dreams are gonna have a
I mean, because
nightmare fuel in a minute.
100%. I mean, because it was one of those situations with kids in particular, because like you never know how kids are going to react to that stuff.
Yeah.
So like when Rachel will tell you, she remembers when we used to do this with Mason, he's a pro now at this stuff. But when like I had Mason and Adrian and Danny in the gym and they were first getting going, I would grab like when we were getting close to a competition, I would grab three athletes and have them stand around the platform like judges. And I would have them take the lift. They would have to wait for the down signal, and then the judges would say like good, bad, or whatever, like indifferent. And it just because I wanted them to get used to that pressure, sort of, so to speak, and just getting used to the uncomfortability of like you're gonna have three individuals that you do not know just trying to bore a hole through you with their laser eyes, like it's just that's just how a meet is. And that's a definite aspect of it. And I think you're right about the CrossFit competition, because I'm thinking back to my first CrossFit competition. I had been competing for years and stuff like that. But I was just like, yeah, like nobody's fucking paying attention to me. Like nobody is, like there's so much going on right now. People are just watching their person. Excuse me. There's nobody, like there's no live stream. There's no none of that stuff. So like we're good here. We're just gonna go
It's you just
out.
go. You're like, all right, I'm gonna do my thing.
So now when we're talking about like so let's go with the 12 weeks, right? That first 4 weeks, like well, and I'm just going off this because this is how I like to, break down programming and stuff. I break down everything 4 weeks at a time, simple math in my head and stuff. What like that first 4 weeks, what is your goal with an athlete?
So the first 4 weeks of that cycle, my goal is like, hey, let's move and let's see where we need to put some focus into, right? Let's not worry about like, hey, we're gonna hit heavy. We may have a couple days in there where it's like, hey, we're gonna build to a heavy triple, and then we'll back down from that and do a couple more, and let's see how you react to, building up to a heavy. But for the most part, we're gonna put more of a focus into, hey, let's just see how you're moving right now, right?
That's very, very similar. Like for me, it's 100% like laying a foundation as well. I call it base building. And I've done it a couple different ways. I've done it with complexes.
Complexes for sure.
The current situation that we're running that seems to be getting much better. Like, because what I used to do is I used to get like I have ADHD. You and I both have talked about our struggles with it in terms of training and whatnot. And like my fear was always like doing too much snatch and clean and jerk off the floor. Like 12 weeks of snatch and clean and jerk is rough. And so for the longest time, that first 4 weeks, I would not pull from the floor. I would do some sort of a complex, whether it was like a traditional like pull plus hang plus squat complex, or like the yo-yo snatches or tempos. Like I had a bunch of different ways that I'd go about it, but now I've kind of gone back to waves, where I'll do the 3-2-1 waves two times through, off the floor. Athletes seem to like that, but yeah, very similar to what you're talking about, is like we won't go very heavy. I think 90% is the heaviest that goes, and it's simply for what you just pointed out, is to see where the breakdown occurs in technique as they're starting to build. And so and there's a lot of triples, it's a lot more volume. Like it for me, it's a classic periodization model, like higher volume, moderate to lower intensity overall. Like I said, we will have like a couple of 90% sessions, which is on the floor, but it's to see if they have that base established in order to handle starting to push that higher intensity. So I definitely agree with that. As we move into the second 4 weeks of that training block, like what is your goal there?
So the goal for me in that second 4 weeks is to start getting a little bit heavier, right? And to your point, the first 4 weeks, I'm right there with you. Like we're doing hang complexes, like maybe, some mid thigh hang power cleans, not even going into the full, full bottom. And then we're going to pair that with like some push press. So we're, just to move, we're still going to have to be able to make sure we're getting through that full depth of range of motion. Like let's do some front squats and some back squats mixed in during the week, but that's just squatting. We're not going to do, full snatch. And then maybe one day of the week, we're like, hey, let's do a complex that includes like a single snatch, maybe a snatch balance and an overhead squat, but again, not heavy, just to like, hey, let's just get the rust out. The second 4 weeks, we're gonna ratchet back the volume a little bit and focus on, okay, so let's start getting heavier. And maybe there's some stuff where we're like, all right, hey, today we're gonna build a heavy single. Right? We're gonna work on a heavy single here, and then we're gonna back that weight down to like 90% of your heavy single, and then let's go through a few more reps. So really focusing on, right, let's build a little bit more strength. Let's increase our percentages.
And so and it's interesting because that's kind of where I am in the middle. Like, so I have my patented snakes and ladders. Lifters either loathed it or they love it. Like, there is no in between with snakes and ladders. Nobody has ever gone through a snakes and ladders session and just been like, meh. And so for those who don't know, snakes and ladders are something that I got for, and I don't understand the name. I'm gonna be 100% honest with you. It makes no sense to me. But like, it came from Glenn. I just didn't modify. I didn't modify it much. But it was a way, it was something that we used to do getting ready for competitions. And so it allows us to, the thing I like about it is twofold. Like you said, it allows us to go heavy. But the other thing that I like is it teaches people to take smaller jumps. Because people when especially with like the younger athletes, when you're telling them that they're going heavy for the day, they forget about every lift up until the lift they want to hit. So like they're going to try to get there as fast as possible, and they might not be properly warmed up, they might not be moving very efficiently or whatever. And to tell them to go back down and work back up, you would have thought that you just like kicked their puppy or something. And so snakes and ladders forces like efficiency in your movement patterns, taking smaller jumps, but it also allows them to go heavy and kind of see where they're at. So for those who are unaware, how I run snakes and ladders, 12 attempts. You want to try to get to 80% and as short of amount of time as possible. And I'm gonna pull it up so I don't screw, because every time I explain it, I always screw up the percentages here. I have the social media calendar right in front of me, and I just did a post on it like 2 weeks ago. So I'm gonna pull this up here. But essentially, so once you get to the 80%, it's you go up by 5% or 3%. Hold on, where's Chris? Where's Chris? I knew I should have pulled this up sooner. Here it is. Nope. I'm gonna give it three. Benefits of the Zercher, Jess's PR snatch. Nope. I know I got it here somewhere. Because Chris was our highlight. Chris was the one I highlighted doing it because he killed it. All right, anyways, I can't find it. I'm going off the top of my head here. I believe so for snakes and ladders, when it comes to, so if you make a lift, if you make a lift, you go up 5%. If you miss a lift, you go down 3%. And you have 12 attempts to do all that. So if you map it out correctly, and it might be 3% and 5%. So somebody's going to correct me. I know they are. But the goal is if you make all 12 of your attempts, you end up at 101 or 102% of your best. And then it's one of those deals where it teaches you, like, I think it is 3% increases. I apologize. It's 3% increases because it teaches you to make like smaller 2, 3 kilo jumps. You're not taking the big 5 kilo jumps or 8 kilo jumps or whatever it is that people tell you. And then
Right.
helps me out as well, because when I'm working with folks, I tell them, I'm like, I need to know the heaviest you make with no misses during these days and the heaviest you make with three misses. And that kind of helps me in terms of determining openers, things along those lines. But
Yeah.
back to like what you were saying is like, in conjunction with that, we are pushing the strength a little bit more as well. Like we'll be pushing a little bit more pause squats, tempo squats,
Yes.
segmented pulls, things along those lines, overhead work, whether it's, squatting, snatch,
Right. Yeah.
balancing, push pressing, things along those lines, in conjunction with the snakes and ladders. The other thing that I like to implement during this time period is timed work, because weightlifters in particular hate conditioning, but you've seen it as much as I have, is like we'll get to a competition and they're gonna have to follow themselves on a 2 minute clock. Because if you miss a lift, you got a 2 minute clock to follow yourself. And if somebody's a jerk and burns your clock, you now got a minute. And so between that, or I had one session, or I had one situation one time that I will never like ever let happen again, was we, in between snatches and clean and jerks at a meet, you have 10 minutes.
Yep.
And then but what had happened to us was we were standing at the table getting everybody warmed up. I had these two athletes going. I had them like ready to go. And then all of a sudden, the person at the table goes, "Oh, we messed up. It's going to be a 5 minute clock." So we literally lost half of our warm up time. And these two athletes, like, thank God they were in shape, because they were
Yeah.
doing like every minute they had to do a lift. And so from that point on, I always add some sort of like an EMOM in the like on the maybe on like the end of the training week. It's kind of a little bit lighter loads. In
Yeah.
between like 80 and 90%, I'll do like a progressive, like week one will be an EMOM, week two will be every 90 seconds, week three will be every 2 minutes, just to get them in that groove of hitting those higher percentage lifts on short rest, because they need to be in shape to be able to do so.
Yeah.
And so but it's just like those are all things that as a coach, like you learn over time. Like had I not had that situation happen, I don't think I ever would have included timed single work.
Yeah. And I think, the timing piece, I agree with you. And it's funny because when you hear coaches, other coaches talk about how they do these different things, like the underlying theme is almost always the same. It's how you're approaching it. So, you have snakes and ladders, which I absolutely love. Like Rachel loves snakes and ladders, and I know other people do as well. And I'm gonna end up using it with some people actually, because I really like it. But where the subtle differences are is like, I'm like, hey, I want you to build to a heavy single today, right? Heavy single is not a one rep max. Heavy single is I hit that lift. It felt good, but if I have to go up, like the odds are I'm not going to hit that next lift as clean. And I want it to be clean. I want it to be a clean lift. I want it to look as beautiful as humanly possible. And then when you get to that point, okay, now we're going to back it down and we're going to do some more work, but based on like the percentages of what you hit on your heavy single. So we're going up, come back down, and then build up again to like 90% of that. And then with the same thing with the tempos and the pauses, like we'll do, hey, you're gonna have a 3 second hold in the bottom of your clean or a 3 second hold in the bottom of your snatch to really dial yourself in. Let's get a, we're gonna do let's do three jerks, and on the last jerk, let's hold it for 5 seconds overhead to really like, get everything dialed in. But the timing piece, it's funny you brought up the timing piece, because while I don't do it, I'll do that kind of particular like EMOM or every 90 seconds or every 2 minutes in like the affiliate CrossFit programming that I do for the strength portion to keep an hour, of training kind of down. In when I'm working with my lifters though, it's like, hey, you're gonna build to a three rep today, and I'm gonna give you 12 minutes to do it in. But I'm going to give you 12 minutes to build up to your three rep, and then I'm going to have you do two more sets of three at 90% of that. So I actually only am going to give you 7 minutes to build up to your three rep. And then you've got that 5 minutes. And the idea is there is, hey, let's get used to the idea of, and this is, I think you run into more commonly with like newer lifters, women tend to do this as well more than men. Men, you have to back their ego down a little bit and be like, hey, I need you to do smaller jumps, buddy, because your lift looks bad. With women, it's like, hey, I need you to be confident enough to do a little bit bigger jump, right? Let's
My
put you
favorite
in.
in those situations is like, it'll look better as I add more weight.
Oh God, I hate that. Well, then add more weight. And let's see how it looks. Let's just prove that point really quick. So, it's I want people to be confident to say, hey, like your early progression, you should be confident enough, like, I'm gonna hit a 50% lift just to like put some oil in the joints. I'm gonna do a 60%, I'm gonna do a 70%, right? And then from there, like kind of judge out how you're feeling. But usually I tell most of the lifters I work with, I'm like 70% should still feel kind of warm up-ish. Like we should be dialed in enough that like 70% is still that kind of warm up-ish point. And then from there, ideally, right, we get into that 80% range and we're doing, smaller jumps, like
100%.
smaller jumps, really dialing in and feeling how we're moving at that point in the game.
And it's like I said, it's interesting to me how like there's a lot of similarities with the way a lot of people coach, because like you talk to any of these coaches and they're all doing the same stuff.
Yes.
They really are. It's just they have their own unique twists on it based on, how they go about it, or what they've experienced in a competition. By the way, I found the post. It is go up by 3%. If you miss, you subtract 5%. I just wanted to make sure that information was out there, in case somebody was just like, he got it wrong, he's an idiot, which I am, but that's not the point.
Right.
But yeah, no, you're 100% right. Like, there's a lot of similarities between this stuff. So I always just find it interesting, because the other thing too is like that I try to explain to folks is competition prep is essentially creating a script. And that's because when you were talking about like the bigger jumps or whatever, I always like certain athletes, when I'm starting to work with them, especially like if it was in person, I would sit there and tell them, I like having people sit between attempts. Rachel was like the biggest culprit of this. I had to keep telling Rachel constantly to sit down, because she would just be standing around loading the bar, getting ready to go and all that. And I'm like, Rachel, I'm like, I'm warning you right now, at a competition, like, you are not going to be able to do this. Like, you've got to start sitting down, and you got to start like doing nothing between your sets. She goes, well, I don't like doing nothing. I was like, yeah, I was like, with the competition, don't care.
That's my Rachel.
Yeah. I had another guy was like that too. Like, Bill is very antsy and like, I remember like when doing his intros, should I go now? No, you should sit down now, is what you should do. And so it's just like, especially in that second 4 weeks, where it is really starting to develop that script in terms of like getting your warm-up attempts put together. Like, what is the optimal? Some people like to take the barbell twice. Some people like to take, 45 kilos, two or three times, and do two rounds of that. And that's all things that like you have to learn as a coach and stuff. Like, I mean, yesterday and tomorrow for my check-ins, it's literally just, I can't see, there you go. It's setting up everybody's attempts and just, how people are going to warm up, what they're feeling, the results from, their heavy days in terms of the no misses and the three misses and such. So with all of that being said, let's move into that last 4 weeks. So we talked about, base building and establishing a baseline, seeing where the body starts to break down when things go heavy in that first 4 weeks. Second 4 weeks, we're starting to ramp up the intensity. We're starting to include competition parameters, pushing their strength work a little bit more, things along those lines. Now, in those final 4 weeks leading up to a competition, for me, I call it my peak and taper. Like, how do you go about those final 4 weeks getting athletes ready?
Yeah, so the final 4 weeks, each week in the final 4 weeks, except for the last week, is gonna have a day where we're focused on, okay, guys, you're gonna build to a rep max for the day in the lift, right? Throughout the course of the week, we're doing, man, lots of like heavier stuff. In the full lift with some, accessory stuff kind of built in to help, right? And that's where I think a lot of people, I'm a big fan of accessory work. I think with the right accessory work, and this includes, in CrossFit affiliate programming, like it does a couple different things for you. One, especially in lifting or anything really that you think about what we're doing is we're bipedal creatures and we're moving everything at the same time. So we can mask and hide deficiencies in terms of strength or stability that way. So we'll like, while we're going through and we're doing some builds inside of the main lifts, right? The other thing that we're going to start doing is let's look at incorporating some heavier accessory work, but single leg, single arm, right? Let's see how we're looking there and where we need to put a little bit of extra. But each week rounds out with now let's look at what is our rep max for the day. And then let's back down off of our rep max, right? Maybe hit a couple more at like 70% just to bring our heart rate back down, get a little bit of confidence boost if we're feeling like, man, I didn't hit where I wanted to hit. Because the reason for the rep maxes once a week is to allow me to start seeing where are we really at, right? Not like your lifetime one rep that we hit like a couple times over the last 6 months, but as we're getting ready to roll into this competition, like where are you legitimately hitting on a regular basis, right? Are we only getting to 82%? And then after 82%, the wheels are coming off. Okay, if that starts showing up, what do we need to do to dial that in for you?
So my question for you, because like the rep max is an interesting thing. So I use rep maxes for things like powerlifting, strong type stuff. I don't as much anymore with weightlifting. And so I'm curious, and this is genuinely like I want to learn about this with you. Do you find there is a threshold or like a correlation with like working rep maxes to experience? Like, i.e., like, do you think newer lifters benefit more from that versus like intermediate or advanced? Or do you think the intermediate lifters can benefit from it as well? Like, where on your range of like the experience level would you really push? Like, case in point, like, because sometimes you're going to get those athletes who just like their thresholds are so high that it's going to get a null and void effect. So like where do you, for those rep maxes in terms of that experience level, where do you find it like the sweet spot for those athletes?
So I'm gonna say the sweet spot, like somebody who's been doing it for a really long time and has that threshold you're talking about, like they're not gonna get as much out of it, right? Your intermediate folks who've got a few years, maybe 2, 3 years of lifting, I find those folks as we roll into a meet get the most out of it because
Interesting.
there's confidence aspects to that, right? Because they still
If you could hit 90% for a double, like there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to open with that weight. Yeah, like
100%,
I could see that.
right? With new people. And I think this is important, like with my new people who are kind of crossing over from CrossFit, because I still coach out of a CrossFit gym, right? So the people that I get are usually rolling out of CrossFit and saying, "Hey, I want to try lifting." And I'm like, "All right, well, just so you know, right? We coach to USAW standard competition standards, so that means you don't get to get away with press outs anymore or any of that shit. So get used to that." And also, like, I'm gonna be right there, and I'm gonna make tweaks to everything. But with those people, what I find is that when we work on rep maxes with them, my statement to them is, "Hey, I just want to see you move through the lift and see where it starts to kind of where your mechanics start to go sideways. I'm not worried about you hitting a true one rep max because let's be real honest with new people. They're not going to hit what a legitimate one rep max for them actually would be because mechanically they're not there. Strength wise, right? There's that. I always tell my new people that come in, I'm like, look, here's the balance right now. Your strength level from lifting and CrossFit is here. Your technique level for the Olympic lifts is down here. At some point, that technique level is going to start to catch up, but it's going to be a while. So don't think just because you can squat X that you're going to roll in and be able to snatch or clean, Y. Instead, what I'm looking for with new people when I say, "Hey, I want you to build 2 rep max for the day," is I want you to show me what you can do with these parameters that I'm laying out in terms of what your technique has to look like.
That's
So if
yeah.
you press out on a lift and you're at, I don't know, let's say you're at, 95 pounds,
Yeah.
and you press out on a snatch twice, I'm gonna pull it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be
right.
like, no, we're done, right? You're not going heavier because you can't
Exactly.
do it the right way. So it's different, right? And to answer your question, there's different things that those two groups get out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the new people, it's the where do you really start to struggle with your technique,
Yeah.
right? And with the intermediate people, it's okay, let's see where you're at so we can confidently go into this competition knowing, to your point, you hit 90% for a double, we are good to open
Yeah.
at that, right? There's no question in our mind mentally, physically, anything else that when we step onto that stage, I'm good.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I like that a lot. That's because I was just curious because I guess like Glenn had would do that from time to time. Like we would do, rep maxes and stuff like that. And I for the life of me, I'd have to go through some of my notebooks because I've got notebooks that I logged every workout that we ever did and stuff, and that's where I'll reference a lot of things. I'm kind of
Yeah.
curious to go back and look and see where he had us doing that stuff. And like I also know because like we work with different levels of athletes. Like most of
Yeah.
your would be in that intermediate to new level. I'm a little bit more intermediate to advanced.
100%. Yeah.
And so like for me, for instance, like it is all about just dialing in where the athlete is going to be on that competition day. So for me, it's just like I said, going back to that, like how heavy you can get with no misses, how heavy you can get with three
Yeah.
misses and stuff, and it's scripted out. And I actually changed it up this year because I didn't like the old format. My old format that I used to use was 14 days out from a competition. They would do a heavy total day, both snatch and clean and jerk, build into a heavy single, following your competition standards and all that stuff. 10 days out, they would do a heavy clean and jerk day. Lighter snatch day, like a couple, like five singles around like 80% or something like that. Then 7 days out would be a heavy snatch day. Same thing with the clean and jerks, like five singles around like 80%. And then 5 days out was openers. And over the course of the year, what started to happen is athletes would pick and choose the days that they were really going to focus on. They would sing because the days were so close together and like, they weren't able to communicate it effectively, but I was able to see what was going on. And it was essentially that their body was not able to recover on such short turnarounds. And so that was something that was a method that I had got from Don McCauley, when he was that muscle driver. But then like the thing about it is, we were training full time. Yes, we had jobs and stuff like that, but training was also our job. So the recovery was aspect was a little bit different for us getting ready for those competitions, which is why that worked. So this year what I implemented, and I'm liking the results a lot more, is so what I did, and I got this from Ray Jones, CJ Cummings' coach, because he told me this is kind of he tapers out way in advance. So 21 days out is when they do their total. Then 14 days out is when they do their clean and jerk. 7 days out is their snatch. And then day five. And over the time, like 5 days out, I've adjusted this. It's either openers or last warm-ups based on how the athlete is feeling, sort of a deal. And then like we'll do a check-in and we'll kind of get all their data and kind of figure out their openers and their attempts and stuff like that. But like so far I'm and like this group getting ready for Vegas is
I
the
like that.
first group to run through it, and the results are more consistent because like what would happen is like it like because the goal for me personally on those days is like how far past 90% can you get. If you get to like my rule of thumb, no matter what the training day is, you hit 80%, you're winning the day. But if you can get to 90% with little to no misses, like you're in really good shape. And that's usually about where athletes were getting. The problem with the old format was like it would be like 90% in one of the lifts. And then the next time it'd come around, maybe they'd get like 87% or something like that. And then all of a sudden, randomly, we'd get like a 98% day. And I'm like, well, that skews the data. Like, so you were sandbagging a little bit. Some athletes weren't, and they just weren't able to recover. Other athletes were definitely like cherry picking the day that they wanted to really push and not stress about stuff. So Overall, so far, like from the data that I do have from this format of spreading it out a little bit more, and then in between those workouts, we're not going much above 85%. What I'll do is I'll give them like five singles, and I always do ranges. I don't give like a strict percentage because you have no idea how people are going to feel. So like they'll have like 3 to 5 singles between 75 and 85%. If your body's feeling like shit, do all your percentage, all your singles at 75%. I don't care. You want at 80%, that's fine. You want to do a couple at 70, a couple at 80, and one at 85, be my guest. But the goal is just greasing the groove and just moving efficiently, getting in, getting off, getting out, and then moving on to your next, moving on to your focus, which is those heavier days. But on average, what I'm seeing is like right now, I think the average like that people were able to go through with this format has been 93.5%, which I'm very
Nice.
happy with the consistency versus the last prep I did. And the data all I got from the Nationals folks was 89%. Now, like 4% is not that big of a swing, but when we're talking about consistency in terms of
Yes.
hitting heavy lifts, getting ready for a competition, that's the kind of trend that I want to see.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, like you brought it up a couple of times now, though, is like the recovery aspect. And I think it's important that people understand like that has to be a regular part of your training as well, right?
Absolutely.
I literally just had a conversation with somebody last night who he's a little older than I am, and I'm 52. And he came into barbell last night, but he had done the CrossFit workout a couple hours prior. And I kind of, I was kind of shaking my head, and he comes in, and I was like, all right, we're gonna see how this rolls. And of course, there ends up being things that he can't do, and he's telling me about like how his squats kind of bothering him and everything else. And I was like, that's because you're not recovering. Like you can't. And I think, this is kind of one of those important things is like most people who view themselves as a quote unquote athlete, right? Need to understand that 2-a-days, you're probably not built for it.
No, I'm sorry. I was gonna say this right now, and this is a soapbox here moment here. But if you are a weightlifting coach working with Gen Pop people, and you start telling them they need 2 days to get better at weightlifting, you suck, and you should get all your coaching
Yeah.
privileges revoked. Like
100%, man. Like it's
there are like Olivia Reeves trains 3 to 4 days a week, and she's one of the best in the world. You can take
yes.
2 days. You know who you are because you still do it. You can take your 2-a-days and you can shove them, you know where.
Yeah.
You let
And
them do.
I, So as long as we're on the soapbox, like from a CrossFit competition standard too, right? People like would tell me, and they would say, well, because when I would program for people that wanted to compete, and we'd go through those cycles, and it's similar in terms of like, hey, you're getting ready, like you want to do the open, you hopefully make it to the next stage, and you hopefully make it to the next stage, right? So you gotta kind of go for that. But then you also need to have some local competitions throughout your year, because we also have to be realistic about like, are you really going to make it out of the open into the next round?
You need benchmarks for
Yes,
progress.
right, 100%. And so, as you look through that, I would get people who are like, well, I'm only training once a day. I'm like, because that's where you're at right now, right? Well, I see, Frazier training all day long. And I would say what you see is a montage of his day.
That's literally all he does, though.
But that's literally, yeah, exactly. And this was part of the conversation I had last night, and it's a conversation I've had with other people. I'm like, that is literally all he does. He wakes up, he eats, he does whatever he has to do to get ready to train, he trains. He gets done training, he eats again. He probably does 30 minutes of mobility work. There's probably, other recovery stuff in there, whether it's a chiropractor or a massage or what have you. Like there's a whole, he probably takes a nap for an hour and then gets up, eats again, and does his training again. Right? And then gets done, eats again, and then gets his solid and like sleep. What he doesn't do is get up at the butt crack of dawn eat a little
Oh,
something, do CrossFit for an hour and a half, go to a desk job,
yeah.
sit all day long, get done with his desk job at noon, go into the gym, try and hammer something out, go back to work, leave work. Oh, I still didn't get my full however many hours of training, and then try and get after it again.
Yeah.
Like that's not happening. And so for the average everyday person who is in that mindset of, hey, I think I want to start competing.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So let's just dial in what you're doing for training
Yep.
to be able to optimize that right now where you're at and meet you where you're at to get you to your first competition.
Exactly.
Let's survive that first competition. Let's see how you do afterwards for the following week. By the way, that following week, don't fucking train.
Yeah.
Excuse my language. Like, you want to do some light recovery stuff? That's great. And do that. But don't go in and the day after your CrossFit competition and go, hey, coach, I'm going to go in and I'm going to hit back squats at 90%. And then I'm going to do, a solid all of this. And it's like, no, why are you doing that? Your CNS is done.
Yeah, right.
Like, stop it. I
And
just want to just stop.
the thing too, is like if you're feeling good, and that's one thing I talked to weightlifters about, because I had one athlete in particular who he just could not lift heavy 3 weeks leading up. So he literally just did 80% work, and he would have great meets. And that's kind of one of the things you have to pay attention to as a coach. Like if you come after a competition, if you're going into the gym the following week and hitting PRs or setting the world on fire, like you mistimed your peak and taper.
Yes.
It's
Big time.
one of those situations where as a coach, like I tell athletes flat out, it takes usually about three competition preps for me to figure out where athletes need to be.
Yes.
And it's one of those like people just don't understand. So yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and wrap this up here, put a neat little bow on it like we usually do. So, first 4 weeks we're establishing a base. Second 4 weeks we're starting to increase the intensity, seeing where the athlete is in terms of introducing competition protocols and things along those lines. And then essentially those last 4 weeks is just, scripting it, run-ups leading up to the competition, however you want to do it, whether it's, through rep work, heavy single work, mapping out your days and such like that. And then we have the competition itself. We've talked about the recovery aspect. We've talked about, the mental aspect. We've talked about benchmarks, all of that stuff. So hopefully that gives people at least a good enough, gauge on in terms of how to set up, competition prep for folks. And obviously, if you guys have questions, you can ask us and talk to us about this stuff. We'll put more detailed information out there, as things come. Like I said, I highly recommend doing a level two course. It's a great way to get that information through USA Weightlifting. Our social media, we post a lot about our competition protocols and things like that as well. John and I will probably start putting out more stuff article wise for the different sport stuff, because I didn't even talk about how I do my powerlifters, strongman, Highland Games, all that stuff. So we can
Yeah,
definitely do
CrossFit
that at another
competitors.
time as well. Before we get out of here, John, do we have any announcements, anything that we want to push on the medias of social?
We have, so if you didn't get the Miami Vice like summer vibes t-shirt, too bad, so sad. That is no longer available. We had a couple people grab it before it ended.
Yeah, it's up, yeah.
However, we did just release the Strength and Unity t-shirt.
I saw the newsletter last night.
So head on over there. It is a limited edition t-shirt. It is available in crops for women or men. If you want to rock a crop as a guy, that's cool. We don't judge. And then t-shirts for men. We are going to be moving all of our athletes over in the next 60 days to the new platform. So if you are a remote one-on-one athlete with Tom and the team, be ready to start making that transition. We'll start working on that with you guys as well. And
Awesome.
then we are going to be releasing in the next 60 days our Strength Agenda affiliate programming. So that will be for gym owners, affiliate owners, obviously, and it will have 5 days of high intensity, like CrossFit style training. We're also going to have 3 days of weightlifting in there. So if you want to run a weightlifting class at your affiliate, it's going to give you, it'll give you some nice cycles to be able to do that 3 days a week. And we're going to be in Worlds next week, man. So
I leave Friday, and so the next week we'll record live. We'll have to take off our backgrounds,
yeah.
because we're gonna record live. I know Jess, Rachel are gonna be in the house with us. I'm hoping Chris will be around. I think Chris is gonna be around because we're talking about doing this on like Wednesday or Thursday. Chris will be around. He'll be a good time. We'll just kind of talk to the athletes. So I'm gonna post a thing on the social media, just asking if anybody's got questions, things along those lines for those guys. And we'll just kind of talk about their experiences in terms of competition prep, being part of the program, all that nonsense. So until then, John, I will see you in Vegas in a few days.
In
Everybody
just a
else,
few
take
days.
care. We'll see you guys on the platform. Appreciate you.
Bye, guys.